You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
If this is going to happen to me, I have to tell my story. Right. My last chemotherapy was during Breast Cancer Awareness Month, so I'm like, I'm going to tell everybody. So I think that's what really gave me the most energy, was just getting out there and talking about it.
Honey. Hey, honey.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I was just listening to this Behind the Booty episode again with Kelly Nishimoto. Mm. And if her name sounds familiar, it should. Cute Booty Lounge sponsored season 9 for us, and they're sponsoring our current season as well. You know, I talk about it every week. This company is all about women. Their amazing clothing line is made by women, and it's made for women. But beyond that, Kelly just has a giant heart. So she's doing her own podcast to give a voice to a variety of badass women, all of whom are doing big things. And it's so good, hun.
It is, isn't it?
Right? And I know it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month, but I still think people are too scared to talk about cancer. Like, if we don't talk about it, maybe it'll just go away.
Totally. And as you know, my mom passed away from cancer a few years back. And I'm not scared to talk about it, but after listening to Kelly's interview with Jessica and Alyssa, I realized there's still a lot I don't know.
Right? Me too. And Alyssa and Jessica are both women in their 30s who have two completely different types of cancer. One of them has a type I've never heard of.
Same. And I think I was most surprised to hear what they were afraid of. Not at all what I expected.
And how about how they discovered they had cancer in the first place?
Yeah, I was just blown away by the courage of both these women. And we know you guys will be blown away too. In fact, we're going to be bringing you a couple of these Behind the Booty episodes over the next few months. Today's episode is about how Jessica and Alyssa discovered that they had cancer and how they processed that diagnosis.
Yeah, it's so good. And we at The Only One in the Room are incredibly proud to bring you this premiere episode of Behind the Booty.
Enjoy the show.
Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us. This is Behind the Booty with Kelly Nishimoto, and I am your host, Kelly Nishimoto. I am the creator of Cute Booty Lounge, which is a lifestyle apparel brand for women made for us by us. Check us out on Instagram at Cute Booty Lounge or online at cutebooty.com. We have a ton of options from leggings and shorts, cute tops and loungewear, sleepwear. You can dress it up, you can dress it down, go to the gym, go to lunch with your girls. Cute Booty is not just a brand, it's a lifestyle. I want to thank the Only One in the Room podcast for hosting us. Super excited about that. I call them my podcast mentors. The first 6 episodes that the Only One in the Room podcast is helping us produce, we are so grateful for their guidance and giving us the opportunity to collaborate. So thank you, Laura and Scott. To give you an idea of what to expect from our podcast, Behind the Booty with Kelly Nishimoto, we will be featuring women who are doing big things with their lives, from entrepreneurship to motherhood to life-changing stories and journeys and more. We're taking a deeper look into these women and who they are and what their stories are, what their why is, and much more. With that being said, I'd like to introduce my guests for today. I have Alyssa Calver, who I like to describe as a badass mom an entrepreneur and lover of shoes.
Thank you. I love that description. Much appreciated.
We also have Miss Jessica Shaw. She is a friend, but she also makes me laugh on Instagram so much with her humor and just her good attitude about everything. And she has some life insurance quotes for you as well.
It's Jessica Coulthard now. But when you met me, it was Shaw.
Oh my gosh, it's still on my phone as Jessica Shaw. Yep. And I meant to ask you before, but you've been a married woman for a long time
for
now.
For like 8 years now.
Oh my gosh, I'm so far behind. Which is probably almost the last time I saw you. So as everyone knows, October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. So I actually don't like that the topic kind of goes untalked about after October, but it's also a good month to create a platform to have a continued conversation about it. And so that's what we want to do here today. It is October. We're kicking off our very first podcast. And what better subject to talk about than breast cancer? And what I would love to dig into today are not only your stories, but also the hard questions, the hard answers, the hard questions, the things that people are afraid to ask and talk about. Because I feel like, you know, once someone is diagnosed and someone hears about it, they immediately go into like a weird space where they don't really know what to say.
Yeah.
And maybe they are experiencing something, but they're afraid to ask about it. So I want to just dive in and get your view on those hard questions and hard answers.
Let's do it.
Sounds good.
All right. So let's do it. Well, first of all, I would love for you to introduce yourselves and also tell us where our listeners can find you if they would like to follow your journey, and give us a little bit of backstory and how you were diagnosed. Alyssa, we can start with you.
Sure. So my name is Alyssa Calver. You can find me on Instagram at alyssacalver.com, E-L-I-S-S-A, Calver with a K. So I was diagnosed July 1st, so just about 4 months ago. A couple months before then, I actually did go for a checkup and I had a breast exam. I didn't think that I had breast cancer, but I just had been feeling off for a bit, little aches and pains and just kind of feeling like something might be out of sorts. So by mid-June, luckily, while I was, you know, getting dressed one day, my husband couldn't help himself and gave a little grope and found my lump. So my husband, of course, saved my life. And when I found the lump, I, you know, assumed it was a cyst or, you know, maybe an old clogged milk duct, you know, all these things that everyone, a lot of people I knew experienced. So I just kind of relaxed, you know, made an appointment. I went in as soon as I could, had another breast exam. They felt it. And then they also felt a lump in my armpit and my lymph nodes. So that's when we kind of escalated the testing. Within like 48 hours, we did everything, mammogram, ultrasound, biopsies. And within a week of that, I found out that it was malignant and I had breast cancer. After that, we did the PET scan. And that's when I found out that it had spread from my breast and lymph nodes to my liver and my spine. So it is stage 4. So that was kind of the whole, you know, week whirlwind of finding that out. And, you know, luckily have had a great support system and went right into chemo and treatment as soon as I could. So within a couple of weeks of that. So I'm just about to go into my last round of chemo starting next week. And then we'll continue treatment after that.
Wow. That's a lot.
Yeah, sorry. It's a mouthful. I know.
No, not the wording. I mean, like the emotion of how everything, you know, transpired.
Yeah, it happened fast. And there's a lot of decisions that had to be made really fast. Like little decisions like preparing for, you know, potentially losing my hair and those kinds of things. Like I decided I wanted to cut my hair really short, which I've never done in my life. And things like, you know, freezing eggs, you know, making these kinds of like life decisions that I didn't think I would make, you know, at the time my daughter was one. So we weren't thinking about that yet. So definitely accelerated a lot. But, you know, luckily, you know, I'm lucky to have so much support to kind of talk through all that. But yeah, it was a whirlwind. It still is. I'm not sure I still understand what's happening, but eventually my mind might get caught up with my words.
It goes pretty fast.
Yeah.
One of the things I love about you, especially when I first met you, is just the energy that you exude. And one of the things I notice is for being diagnosed only 4 months ago, your attitude and your personality is just so like bam, like, let's go, I'm ready. Was it always like that from the beginning or did you have a lull in the beginning?
Well, thank you, by the way. I'm glad that that is how I exuded. And it is how I am. You know, I really like 90% of the time feel very positive. You know, I think there's so much advancement mm-hmm. in the type of cancer that I have that it's very promising and there's a lot to be optimistic about. I think attitude and all that plays a huge part, you know, not just in healing and going through all of this, but I might as well enjoy my life while we have it, you know, now more than ever, you know, be appreciative of that. So I've really tried to maintain the whole time, you know, staying active, staying positive. So I don't think I have had that lull, which mm-hmm. I'll be honest, like makes me a little nervous that maybe it's coming, but maybe I just skipped it and I get to just have all this great support of people knowing that, you know, like you are doing so well and I can be on that train too.
Yeah. Yeah. Lulls suck. I mean, we're also in Mental Health Awareness Month. Or was it a week or a month? It was a couple of weeks.
Should be longer.
It should be longer.
Yeah, not long enough.
But I feel like it's really, you know, it's like in our faces now because of COVID and all of these Zoom things and people are isolated. So mental health, I mean, it's also a good topic to pair with breast cancer awareness because of the feelings and emotions that come out. And you need, it's like you almost need double support.
Yes.
Because now you have this and you're dealing with it almost alone because you have to go to chemo.
Yeah, unfortunately, I do have to go to chemo alone now, which is kind of a bummer because on one of the chemos that I have, I ice my hands and my feet during it. Mm-hmm. And just like little things like having to navigate that myself, you know, while I'm like tired and all that. My husband would do it for me originally when he was allowed to come the first couple rounds. But, you know, just to note on the mental health, too, you know, I'm talking about all these tests I had, you know, all these things to address. And, you know, in the first month of doing it, none of it was mental health. Mm-hmm. It was actually very hard for me to get them to like rush me in with a therapist or someone. I just proactively knew that I wanted to speak to someone mm-hmm. and I've already gone through a few. So I'm excited to hear if Jessica has any tips on that end, because it's hard to find someone that can really relate to the cancer piece. And I found that, you know, through insurance and finding the ones that were recommended to me, they weren't well-versed in cancer or my cancer. And I just didn't feel like that part of this, the mental part, was really focused on.
Right. Because yeah. How can they relate? Mm-hmm. You know, and a lot of times you go to therapy and they kind of give you just like the basic textbook things. I've been to a couple of therapists where at the end you feel like, okay, I just answer my own questions because you just asked me what my problems were. I spoke them out loud and we kind of intuitively know what to do and how to change. But if they can't relate to your specific experience, then you're like, crap, I just paid for it. It's like a waste of an hour, a waste of a couple hundred bucks.
Well, to that note, luckily, partway through, when I wasn't really meshing with anyone that I was getting through insurance, I stumbled upon this nonprofit called Fran's Place. And Fran actually has similar cancer to myself in stage four and has been a longtime survivor. And she actually offers therapy for cancer patients and their families as well. So talking to her gave me a lot of comfort just because anything I said from like what doctor I was going to what types of chemo, she knew everything because she was so well-versed in it. So grateful for that because that's made a huge difference.
So in a minute, I want to get into like the types of cancer and kind of an explanation so that people understand that what the different stages mean. And there's also different levels to each stage.
Yes.
But first, Jessica, I would love to hear your story and how you were diagnosed.
So my name is Jessica Coulthard. You can find me on Instagram at Jessica Coulthard. I am 32 now. And when I had my son, I really just wanted to focus on my health. My grandmother had passed away at 30 from breast cancer. So I never knew her, but a couple people had cancer on my mom's side. So I just started telling my doctor, I want a mammogram. And she told me, you're too young. We can't give you one until you're 40. And I would go to the doctor for everything. If I felt weird, I would go see my doctor. Like, it was a comfortable place for me. And I finally found a doctor who said, let's send you for genetic testing. And they found some type of genetic, not the BRCA gene. It's called Li-Framini syndrome. And 90% of people get cancer by the time they're 50. So once they found that gene, we had started doing testing every 6 months. We did really detailed testing. And in 2019, I had a full body MRI and it was clean. In 2020, I went back for just a breast MRI and I had 10 tumors in my right breast. So that was just in a year. And I got the call that they found cancer And it was, of course, on a Friday afternoon, so they couldn't do anything until Monday. That was probably the scariest 2 days of all of it for me. Mm-hmm. Because I'm like, what do I tell my husband? Am I going to die? Am I going to... And the geneticist, all he said is, all I can tell you is there's cancer cells. The oncologist will call you on Monday. The oncologist was on vacation. So I'm like, just get me on the phone with somebody.
Right.
And I finally spoke with a surgeon. And she made me feel comfortable from the get-go. Just put me at ease. We're going to do surgery. You need a double mastectomy. So I had to have both breasts removed. And then when I did it, they would find out if I needed chemo. I had done the PET scan. They didn't see it spread anywhere else. When I did the surgery, they found it had spread to my lymph nodes. So they knew it had escaped the breast. They just didn't know how advanced. So I knew I was going to need chemo. But I remember the mastectomy. My biggest thing was like, am I going to get implants? Like, how soon can I get these implants? So that was a big worry for me. And obviously, I wanted to know chemo, how long it was going to take, but that like, was but the first boobs. Step. Yeah. But the first step was the mastectomy. And then I remember waking up from surgery and the nurse came and that was my first question. Do I have implants or expanders? She's like, you have implants. And then my second one, do I have to do chemo? Yes, you have to do chemo. I'm like, I'm going back to sleep then. Like, let's talk about it later.
And then may I ask what size implants you got?
They are 750 cc. So Ooh. I don't really know the size yet. I'm still like in sports bra mode every day. But 750 cc, they were the biggest ones they had.
That's
going
to be a nice solid double D cup.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. So I would love to know, or I would love for you to tell the listeners what stage you were in and what does that mean for you, your treatment, and just kind of explain the levels of cancer.
I'll say mine first because it's quicker than yours for sure. So mine is considered 1C. Some doctors would call it stage 2. Typically, stage 1 does not need chemo or radiation. They can treat it with a lumpectomy or a mastectomy. Mm-hmm. So mine had spread to my lymph nodes. All my tumors were under 2 centimeters. So they considered it stage 1. But because it had spread, I had to do chemo. So I did 6 rounds of chemo, and I will start radiation in 2 weeks, and I'll do 33 rounds of radiation, and then hormone therapy to stop the production of estrogen, mm-hmm. because mine is ER positive, and then there's different types, and mine is only estrogen positive, so they're going to put me in early menopause to stop the production of estrogen, mm-hmm. just in case there's any other escape cancer cells. So far, my treatment looks like it will be done with radiation by Christmas, and then the hormones will go for 5 years.
Okay, and can you please explain what the difference between radiation and chemo is?
Chemo is a liquid they put through your veins that circulates to clean and kill any fast-dividing cells. Radiation, because I haven't done it, I don't know the quickest way to explain it, but they tell me it's like going into an X-ray machine, and it's pretty much just focused on one area to kill anything that's there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Alyssa.
Well, I just want to say it's so interesting. Like, I really feel like breast cancer is like a thumbprint. Like, we're all so different. Like, even hearing Jessica talk, and I've talked to a lot of people lately with breast cancer, like, I just learned a lot that I didn't know. And I haven't spoken to anyone with your exact scenario. You know, so it's really interesting how that works. But so mine, stage 4, it was, you know, with the 1C, you know, different ones in the different stages, once it goes like certain distance from the breast or a certain size, it's just automatically stage 4. Yeah. So because it went to my liver and to my spine, that's where there wasn't really like any calculations or things to assess. Because it was stage 4, really the chemo is the key to fighting it. So kind of like, you know, fighting with surgery, fighting with drugs. Mine initially is that. So I used the chemo, of course, to target all over in terms of getting the cancer out. And then there's 2 targeted therapies because I'm what's called HER2 positive. So I'm estrogen negative and PR negative and HER2 positive. So my understanding, and correct me if I'm explaining it wrong, is, you know, the things that you're positive on is what you can target. So like the early menopause, I wouldn't be doing because mine is not estrogen positive. So there's certain treatments that wouldn't be relevant because of that. Yeah. So the HER2 is a piece that I'm very lucky. There's two immunotherapies called Herceptin and Perjeta. And those are the two that I'm getting right now and will continue to get as long as they'll work for me. And those specifically target that HER2 positive piece. So if this was like 8 to 10 years ago, those wouldn't have existed. And there weren't really things to target that. So lucky.
Someone spoke at our event. We had a breast cancer fundraiser and she was HER2 positive. And I think she is an ultrasound tech. So she's like, it's fine. I don't have anything. And she, I think she said in 2008 was when they first found those two things for the HER2 positive.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, it was a little, and then I think, I don't know when it got FDA approved, but now there's 9 FDA approved treatments that are, you know, similar in terms of if these stop working, I can pivot to. So, you know, relative to being in this world of having cancer, I feel very lucky. Because the, you know, prognosis on that is just so much better than it would have been, like you're saying, you know, before those existed. So luckily, a lot of attention does come towards different types of breast cancers, but I would have never known any of these things 4 months ago. So
I really feel like I just had a whole education here, because you can read things online, right, and you retain a little bit of information, but getting the personal story and then how the words come out of your mouth of your experience and hearing all of the medical terms, it kind of resonates with me a little more. You know, like I understand it. It's in my face. You know, it's more tangible to get the information. You and I were talking the other day about someone you knew with stage 3. So she, there was no therapy available to her, even though she's stage 3.
Add in, Jessica, if you know more about this, but triple negative. I have a few friends who are considered triple negative. So I'm HER2 positive, you know, you're estrogen positive. If all of those things are negative, there's no mutations there to target. So my friends who are triple negative still have chemo treatments, and a lot of the drugs are somewhat similar. There's some more aggressive ones as well that they've had to go on, but it's a bit more of a wild card of what's going to work or not. So there's a lot more checking throughout from what I've been told from them, because, you know, my HER2 positive is very aggressive, so it grows really fast, but it also responds to chemo really fast, whereas with the triple negative, they're not targeting a specific mutation and receptor, so they're kind of having to shoot in the dark a little bit and hope for
that. I was going
to
say, that's what the positives give you, the target of exactly what you're fighting, the type of hormone, those types of things. So the triple negative, I always heard them and I thought, oh, that's good.
Right. So can you walk our listeners through like a day of chemo, what it's like, how it is on your body and the after effects?
I can go first on that one. So my chemo is a little bit different because I did something called cold capping to save my hair.
I was going to ask you.
So
about that.
After I told my surgeon, take my boobs, I don't care. Like I could cover it with a bra. I'm not afraid of surgery. Take them. And I found out I had to do chemo. I cried more about losing my hair than I did about losing my breasts. Mm-hmm. And I was terrified. And a friend of mine, she was going through cancer. She had messaged me, hey, I just want to let you know about this thing called cold capping. I'm like, what the heck is cold capping? So we start Googling it and we find out it's a cap. It's not cheap. It's a cap that freezes your hair follicles during treatment. So there's two different types. Mine, thankfully, was connected to a machine that freezes your hair an hour before chemo. So I sit there an hour before chemo. My treatments were 6 hours. They gave me Ativan, so I slept most of the time and ate. Slept and ate. And then after the chemo treatment, my head has to defrost. And get back, or not defrost, I guess opposite. Well, the icicles have to defrost because they soak it.
There's legit icicles on
your
head?
Yes, they have to break the ice from the cap and my hair.
Wow.
It's that cold. So then it's 2 hours post-chemo. So I would sit there about 8 to 9 hours a day. And then in the morning was, you know, all the follow-ups, what's next with my oncologist. So I would say my chemo treatments were wrapped in heated blankets mm-hmm. with a freezing cold brain.
But and then when you go home, what is it like?
I think for me, it was I had a lot of bone pain. I didn't get any nausea. That I was afraid of the nausea too. But I had a lot of bone pain. I just remember like trying to lift my legs up all the time. The second day I would sleep all day. You just feel weak. I remember when my eyebrows started falling out or my lashes started falling out. But honestly, that's what I thought about the most was my hair falling out. And then the steroids, they were great. My doctor gave me a great cocktail because a couple days after chemo, I had, I would say 4 days after, I have the highest energy. Like right now, I'm 2 weeks, and this is when I'm the most tired, brain fog, pregnancy brain. But that little few days of steroids, like I was so productive.
On fire.
Yes, on fire. But I'm grateful I didn't have horrible chemo symptoms. I would say the leg and body pain were the worst. But once I got started getting acupuncture, it made a world of difference for all of it. Acupuncture helped a lot. But also, I just, it's almost like it felt like, if this is going to happen to me, I have to tell my story.
Right.
Once I talked to my husband and he gave me the okay, I'm like, if this is going to happen, I have a platform where I'm in front of people. I'm going to tell the story. I'm done with chemo. My last chemotherapy was during Breast Cancer Awareness Month. So I'm like, I'm going to tell everybody. So I think that's what really gave me the most energy, was just getting out there and talking about it.
Alyssa, what's your experience of chemo?
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that. I didn't know about the icicle part, which is really interesting. So what was interesting is the first three rounds of my chemo treatment, I was on two different chemo drugs than I am now for the last three rounds. So like my initial side effects were very different from what they are now. So initially, because of the steroids, I felt like that night, the next day, I was like amped, like, oh, I like got this chemo. I got this, you know, and then bone pain and things would set in. Yep. Initially, I had to do self-injections for 5 to 6 days, depending on the round, which would cause more bone pain. So you'd have to, you know, you take Claritin and Tylenol an hour before and all these different things to kind of combat everything.
Was that for your immune system?
Yes.
The stuff you did at home?
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. Did you have any of those?
I didn't.
Okay. Yeah. You know, they weren't that bad in terms of like if you've similar to hormone injection shot, like with like if you ever done, you know, IVF or an IUI or things like that. You know, we're women, so we suck it up and we're badasses. but yeah, so I would normally, you know, it was like day three or four is when I would feel kind of the worst. Mm-hmm. With my initial chemo treatments, I was on two drugs called carboplatin and Taxotere. And the Taxotere was the one that I was told like the number one side effect was hair loss. So that was why I kind of made the decision to not do cold capping, just because, I mean, you're definitely tougher with me on that. I was like, I don't think I can do 8 hours of the cold cap, but maybe if I had talked to you before, I would have tried it out. So I did start losing a lot of my hair. And that to me, like while I was losing it, was a lot harder than just it being gone. Mm-hmm. So I think the actual like fear of while it was happening bothered me more than knowing that it would be eventually gone. So once enough fell out, I just said, screw it, and went and got it shaved.
While we're on that topic, when I started chemo, I know we had talked about mental health. I had gotten a therapist before I started chemotherapy because my biggest fear, 60% of women still lose their hair with cold capping. So my main reason for getting therapy was to process if I lost my hair. And luckily, we meshed right away. I loved her. I still see her now. I don't plan on stopping, you know, our sessions, but that was my biggest, that process of it falling out and every eyelash hair I lost was still emotional.
Yeah, I totally get it. And I think, you know, everyone's so different in how I think we process that. And, you know, for me initially, my plan was I had, you know, wigs and things prepped. There's a great nonprofit out of New York called Five Under 40. For women under 40 with breast cancer. And they virtually hooked me up with a real hair wig. And they're just awesome and supportive. And when I want to feel like me, I throw that on and it's great. But a lot of the time I feel like empowered, just kind of embracing what was making me nervous. Because it's like, well, screw that. I'm not going to give that the power anymore. You know, let's just take that out of the factor. But what's interesting is since I've switched chemo drugs, so I'm now on a drug called Taxol, which you're on as well. My head hair is actually growing back, but I've more recently started losing my eyebrows and eyelashes. So it's just everyone's different, I guess, with the different pieces of what affects us how. I did, going back to the initial few rounds, each round is kind of like, you know, someone knocks you down. Every time it's a little bit harder to get back up. Mm-hmm. So by the third round of those first two drugs that I did, I was vomiting and a lot more nauseous. So that was definitely like where I felt like a stereotypical chemo patient mm-hmm. for the first time. And then luckily, because my scan went so well on the halfway point and kind of assessing with my stage and getting second opinions, we switched the chemo, which has been a lot less side effects now. But, you know, I think of it like everything, this seems like it's going to be the worst thing in the world mm-hmm. and nothing ends up being the worst thing in the world. So relative to the worst thing, it's all tolerable and we can handle it because, yeah. again, we're badasses.
Totally.
Thank you for listening. Please tune in again next week when we bring you part two of this riveting conversation where Jessica and Alyssa get real about body image during and after chemo, talk about what it's like to be afraid to lose their hair and their breasts, and also discuss the emotional toll of other people's reaction to their diagnosis and their treatment.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for Dungeon Masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.